And so, in order to find love, it actually requires us to be somewhat countercultural. It shouldn't be as hard as it is, but it is based on who the world tells us girls and women to be. And so, we kind of break down those cultural expectations in our work together and really find a way for us to be empowered and have the relationship of our dreams, because it does actually require both.
Welcome to the Thriving in Chaos Project. Certified divorce coach and credentialed mediator Paulette Rigo invites you to grab a favorite beverage, find a cozy seat, soothe your soul, and take a listen. This podcast was created and inspired by our courageous journeys, love for connecting with others, and having meaningful conversations that teach, impact, and heal through sharing our stories. In each episode, Paulette will be joined by some of the most experienced and compelling experts in all things divorce and transformation. Listen to prepare and thrive through the toughest chapters as we reveal our hardships, celebrate our lessons learned, and see the future clearly with encouragement, hope, and joy. Leave feeling empowered and prepared to approach life and maintain our dignity no matter what. Each podcast episode focuses on sharing real conversations from real life situations. Isn't it time you thrived? Welcome to the Thriving in Chaos Project. I'm so glad you're here today. I have a special guest. So, Paulette, your host, is being joined by Dr. Holly. She is the founder, director of Find Love at Last. And just for a split second, I'm going to tell you a little bit about her, and we're going to jump right into her expert zone. So Holly is a clinical psychologist and has a successful career in executive search, which led her to be uniquely qualified to find your perfect match. Welcome to the podcast, Holly. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you so much, Paulette, for having me.
Well, you know, we haven't known each other long, and that's okay. I am enthralled with the fact that people are finding me from every corner of the world. I didn't expect this to happen. I, you know, humbly just was doing my work. And before I know it, I'm just meeting people in this not location-centric world that we're living in now. And I think that's a good thing that's come out of the pandemic. And this is the first podcast I've recorded in a while because I took a little bit of a hiatus because I launched my book, Better Divorce Blueprint. And if there's anything I've learned from being an entrepreneur and being a coach, a consultant, a speaker, an author, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, it's the fact that you, yes, you've got to multitask at times, but you've got to really focus in and delegate. So I am jumping back in with zest and vigor and really excited to get back into recording podcasts because I missed it. I really love bringing phenomenal women, predominantly. I know men, I love men too. Nothing personal out there, guys, but women really are storytellers because we have stories to tell. And I think women need to tell them. I believe that every woman has at least two books hidden inside them. So I am thrilled that we're going to have this conversation today with Dr. Holly about dating, everything from matchmaking, coaching, getting in there with a matchmaker, a dating expert. So let's just jump right in, Dr. Holly. Why, oh, why, oh, why did you want to become a dating coach?
Well, I didn't for many years. I had no idea I was going to end up here, like so many. I actually started my career as a psychologist working with victims of crime. Mm-hmm. And I went straight through from kindergarten to PsyD, in my case, PhD for those who equivalent. And it was a really long path, and I got a bit burnout after working with trauma victims for a while in that very long trajectory. And so when that happened, I went into executive search, which is what I had done as I worked my way through graduate school. I was pairing top talent with corporations and startups in Silicon Valley. And I did that for a number of years, and it was lucrative, but not terribly meaningful for me. And so after I got laid off many years later, I really took it as an invitation to find my calling. Yeah. And so it set me on this soul searching journey, and I explored all of my different passions, of which there were many. It took me to Africa twice. And when I got back, I decided to start this business, Find Love at Last, as a career coach to really help people expedite their path to love. Mm-hmm. That is my professional journey. Personally, I had a lot of boyfriends. And what I most wanted in this life was to find true love, like the kind that the movies were made of, and just deep and meaningful and a fulfilling relationship. And so on my journey, I had some really wonderful men in my life, and I had some really not so wonderful men in my life. And after the last not so wonderful man, again, I was set out on a soul searching journey, did a lot of inner work. Spent 8 months, you know, virtually alone and asking really difficult questions. At the end, who I was meant to be. And I met my amazing husband, and we've been together now, almost 8 years. And we're married happily. And I really think that finding love shouldn't be so hard. And it's really hard for a lot of people to find that kind of soulmate connection. And so I just thought if I could use my own professional and personal experience to help others expedite their path, then that's really what I wanted to do. And so I'm really grateful to have finally found what I feel I'm meant to do here.
I love your... journey that you just walked us down, from you coming to the realization that you had been educated, got your PhD. I've never heard it called a PhysD, but that's super cool. And you just learn something new every day, right? So here you are educated and working diligently, making good money, as you said, but it wasn't fulfilling you, right? You felt like you were wearing someone else's shoes or living somebody else's life, or just, it wasn't you, right? I always say it's kind of like using someone else's toothbrush. It just is icky, right? It just feels icky. It's not like you're going to die from it. Well, you never know, but most people. So, it just doesn't feel right, you know? And all of a sudden you had this awakening, a revelation, a calling, a moment. Take me to that exact moment. What was that moment? Walk us through that moment that you said, aha, something has to change, because if I keep going down this road, something bad's going to happen or I'm going to be miserable. So I think that precipice, the tipping point is so important, particularly in the work I do and in the work you do. So what was it for you? I know mine, but what's yours?
Well, you're reminding me of this day that I was in clinical training with, doing my postdoc work. And I was sitting around, there were six of us with my trainer. And I remember him looking around the group, and this is after 11 years of college, writing a dissertation, 3,000 clinical hours.
Ugh.
And he looks around our group and he says, every year there's one person that comes this far and doesn't become a psychologist, that doesn't actually do the work. And I remember looking around that circle, wondering which of you are gonna be the one in this group that doesn't do that work? I couldn't imagine doing, the amount of work is just beyond comprehension. Mm. And so I couldn't imagine that someone would come that far and not actually do clinical psychology work. And what is so interesting and ironic is it turned out to be me. And I really feel I'm still doing the work. I mean, I'm still, but it's in a different way. I have a very specific niche, and I'm more of a coach than a psychologist. And that always fit better for me anyway. Mm-hmm. So I guess, like, in terms of, you know, pinpointing when that moment was, I always had the sense that coaching was more of a fit for me than you know, clinical psychology work, like in the classic sense. Coaching was just kind of coming out of the woodwork at that time. And then, you know, executive search was kind of, it was a nice fallback. I needed a little bit of a break. And it was kind of the perfect time for then. And actually, when I was working in search, it afforded me more time to be social. And that's actually when I started dating for the first time actively and really kind of embraced the adventure of dating. And had I not had that time, there's no way that I could be a dating coach now. I had to have my own personal experience and adventure so that I know how to guide people now. Mm. So, but still, it wasn't professionally fulfilling for me. And so, being a multi-passionate woman, I actually explored all of my different passions because nothing was quite a fit yet. And I had this kind of inner yearning for something different. And it became so big and amplified that I couldn't not explore what was nagging me. I didn't know what it was, but I was a huge Oprah fan, and she used to talk about the two most important days of your life. The first being the day that you're born, and the second being the day that you figure out why. Mm-hmm. And so I was a huge Oprah fan. I would watch every day, and she would talk about this. And I remember thinking, I don't know my why. I don't know why I'm here. I don't know what my calling is. I have many, many passions, and I wasn't sure which should be a hobby and which should be my profession. And so what I ended up doing was took a lot of time, but I actually explored every one of my passions. Mm. And truthfully, none of them worked out. This was the very last one of my passions. And I kind of secretly wanted to do this one the most, but I explored every other one. They didn't work out. And this was the one that was left. And so I just did it. I went for it and never looked back.
Thank you for sharing. I don't think you anticipated I was going to ask you that. So let's get in the mindset here. Here you are having this business. And I love the name, Find Love at Last. It's great. And I'm assuming, and I don't like to be presumptuous, that you work with men and women, but they come to you in a state of fear, confusion,
frustration.
You know, I'm sure you could put in about 94 more words after those, but let's just start with that, not to get overwhelmed ourselves. And how do you get them from that point to a point of, aha, this is why I'm where I am, and this is where I think I need to go?
Yeah, great question. Yeah, most who come to me are frustrated and exhausted. It's usually with online dating. They're not liking the results. They're not liking, for the women, they're not liking what's showing up, you know, online. Mm-hmm. And so they get frustrated and then they call me. And so they're usually pretty clear by the, you know, it's a big day when someone gets so frustrated and exhausted that they're willing to pick up the phone and call me or shoot me an email. Yeah. They're usually pretty clear on what they want. And they're pretty clear on what they're clear in terms of, I want a lifetime partner. I want to be married. I want to have children. They're clear on that. They're not sure how to get from where they are to where they want to be. And so that's where I come in. So, you know, we look back at what's worked, because there's parts of every relationship that did work. That's why we had relationships with those people. And there's parts that didn't work. And so we talk about that, and we let those things inform our choices of the future. And most people aren't so clear about what they're looking for. They don't know what's most important or what to prioritize higher than something else. And so usually when we work together, people get far more clear than they ever have been in their lives about what will really work for them, what they really need. Most people are focused on what they want, but not what they need. Mm-hmm. So focus on both.
Right. And yeah, I mean, it's a little bit different the work I do, but I'm nodding and listening, you know, obviously walking down this path with you. And you did hit on a good point there that we, and when I say we, I don't necessarily mean you and I here in this moment, but you know, we as a human race long for connection, and we long to be, you know, in a relationship that feels healthy and reciprocity, where you're, you know, getting your needs met and you're meeting the needs of other, and we don't, you know, jump into a conversation about taking responsibility for other people's happiness. And that's a whole nother podcast. But, you know, here we do have this underlying human need, right, for connection. And there's many different ways of feeling that, yes, this is the one, and maybe it's reciprocal, maybe it isn't. It can be devastating when they're not congruent, and one person is, you know, maybe this high and the other person's a little lower. My hands are kind of like a seesaw right now, like a teeter-totter, but it's a matter of just realizing, like, there's something about this relationship that's working and something about this relationship that isn't, and coming to that decision of saying, why? And why do I keep hitting my head against the wall and finding the same, or banging my head against the wall, as the saying says, and keep finding the same patterns in these situations? And I do find in divorce, you know, it takes a lot for somebody to really make that decision. Like, we can't fix this marriage. There's nothing we can do to fix it. We have to proceed and move forward to end the marriage. But then the fear starts. I'm going to be alone for the rest of my life. I can almost hear the drama and the violins. You know, I've got my hand on my forehead now. And that's not to make light of it. There is that feeling of literally, I am terrified to spend the rest of my life alone. But do you find that that's extremely common, or am I just, you know, seeing a bunch of desperate divorcees here?
No, I think it is common, especially for those who've been married for 10, 20 years. I work with a lot of empty nesters, you know, so women in their 50s, 60s, 40s, who've already had a marriage, and they know how bad it can be. And they certainly don't want to replicate that, but they might not be sure what they need to do differently this next time to really co-create the relationship of their dreams. And so that's where I step in and help mentor them. And, you know, most people, they don't know what to look for. They prioritize the wrong things and not the right things in order for them to be happy. And it makes sense. If you don't know how to do it differently, of course you'd be fearful that you're going to replicate what you had. I had that fear too, you know, when I was younger, and my parents' marriage wasn't one that I certainly wanted to replicate. And so, you know, when you don't know what you can do about it, there's a fear of that uncertainty. Mm. So it makes a lot of sense. But what I want your audience to know is that love in your heart, that hope for that dream in your heart for the man or woman of your dreams, that's there for a reason, and that is intended to inform you about who is supposed to be your partner. And the mere fact that you have that hope in your heart, it's kind of our GPS system, if you will. Just like I was trying to find my calling, and I had to really listen to my soul's calling and that whisper in your soul. Sometimes it's really quiet. But that same whisper is in your heart and your soul for your future partner. And so it's intended for you.
Mm. Yes, it is intended. And it's important that you also dial up the volume on that, so you're really amplifying that message, because it can be a whisper after it's been squashed. and criticized and maybe negated, and you've just been denying it and avoiding it because, well, let's face it, whether it's a marriage that's breaking up or just a long-term relationship or just a boyfriend. In fact, after I interviewed you today, my next interview is with my second youngest client ever. She's 19, and I worked with her for 2 months on how to heal from a breakup of a boyfriend at the request of her mother. I helped her get through her divorce. So, you know, it's interesting. We don't listen to that voice enough sometimes to know, like, oh, I'm just being a needy person, or gee, that, you know, there are other things that are more important. My money, my wardrobe, my car, my job, my all those things that are so important to us, or we think they're important. And that voice of really longing, like, there's something wrong about this relationship, there's something right about this relationship. And what is it about this relationship I don't want to repeat? That I believe too is something that I hear a lot, is like, ooh, my worst fear would be to get to find that same type of relationship that didn't work. You know, particularly women that are in high conflict divorce cases, and maybe there's a codependent relationship with the high conflict spouse. All of a sudden, you're so wrapped up in the drama of dealing with somebody that's not a great communicator, and both of you are not compatible, that you're not fulfilling each other's personality styles or communication skills are different. And it's so hard to see that. I can see where having someone to hold your hand and walk you through it methodically, calmly, pragmatically, to really uncover what it is you need, what it is you want. You know, we all think, and this is a little bit of a joke here, you know, we all want, you know, the Brad Pitt or the, you know, the perfectly handsome gentleman that's the right height and has the right job and the right amount of this and the right amount of that. And in actuality, in my opinion, it all boils down to core values. Like, what is it really that you need? I always give my clients a list. It's in my book. I think it's page 30 and 31. It's like a spreadsheet of, and it says core values list. And I have them circle. They're 25, and there's, I think, 172. And they hate me for it because how the hell do you pick 25, you know? And then after they pick those, I make them narrow it down to usually 5. If I'm in a good mood, which I usually am, I let them pick 10. But out of 172, you have to boil it down to 10. Now, if you don't take those core values with you into the future, and that includes every aspect of your life, including a new, just somebody to have dinner with, you know, you're going to end up needing me again, and you don't want me more than once. So now I want to segue a little bit here, because I find, Dr. Holly, is that the fears about working with a coach, there's a little bit of a misconception I hear quite often, I would say weekly, oh, I don't need a coach, I already have a therapist. Right. Or I don't need a therapist, I already have a coach. Mm-hmm. Vice versa. Right. This isn't to delineate one or the other. But so from a clinical, you know, expert, could you describe in layman's terms or lay talk, you know, common speak, what is the difference in that working with a coach versus with therapy, or shall we say counseling? Because I know there's licensed clinical social workers, there are psychologists, psychiatrists, there's probably what, 8, 10, 12, 15 labels of, shall we say, therapists, right? And this isn't with all the little fancy letters after the name, but whatever the fancy letters are after the name, what is it, as you could explain to somebody, what the experience of working with a coach versus working with a therapist?
Yeah. Well, there is a lot of overlap, you know, and I'm going to just kind of speak in broad, you know, brushstrokes here. But, you know, I've I've been a therapist, I've been a coach, and I've also been a therapist client as well as a coaching client. So I've kind of had all four roles, if you will. So I've had that unique experience. So therapy, just, you know, kind of broadly speaking of it, but, and there is a lot of overlap, but therapy oftentimes has a past orientation. We're talking about the past and resolving the past. And with coaching, there's more of a present and future orientation. Coaching tends to be more action oriented. There's often a result that we're going for. There can be goals and can be more future oriented. I think there's a place for both at different times with different needs. Often therapy can be really helpful if someone's struggling with depression, anxiety, a character disorder, or trauma. There's so many of us walking around with unresolved traumas that are really getting us to stay in the past. But that said, I will also tell you that the most impactful, effective work that I've ever done was actually with a coach, resolving trauma. I had more results, more effective results with a coach as well. So I'm, you know, which is one of the reasons why I am a coach. I'm kind of a product of coaching, of both really. But so that's how I think of the difference.
I like that. And just as a little bit of a caveat too, it also differs from the role of an educator and a teacher. My background was more in teaching, education as a dance educator. I also taught yoga, but I've also been a coach in the sense that I'm a birth doula, and I can't think of anything that's more coaching than when you're with a woman for usually 24 plus hours through bodily fluids. Every emotion there exists, from elation to, you know, terror, you know, physical pain to just the sheer joy of you know, it's an honor too. So, but my role as a coach is much more of that. My husband calls me the quarterback, you know, that I'm a little bit more of like the strategist and, you know, I mean, kind of the choreographer too, of like gathering the team and pulling together all the parts that need to be there. Because if I don't know the answer, and I don't usually, you know, the things I know well, I know someone that does though. And that's part also of a coach, right? Like, you know, let's say a football coach, or, you know, you've got all the different, but you've got your defensive core and your offensive, you know, you've got specialties, and, you know, the kicker has a coach, and you've got all your little, you know, specific laser focused details of it. So it's really important that we don't wear a hat that we don't own. You know, we can wear lots of hats in the coaching roles, but I thought it was an important topic for you and I to talk about because of your background too. It's a question I get every darn day. I answer it very similarly like you, but I do kind of calm their you know, shall we say, confusion and nerves about that it isn't a replacement for therapy. It's an augmentation and a future trajectory of goal-driven, action-oriented thinking partner, future establishment of where do I need to get, and how the hell am I going to get there? Because I am too afraid to do it alone, and I don't know how to do it alone. And the people that I thought could help me aren't, it's not working.
Yeah. A lot of my clients have worked with a therapist as well as myself, you know, because, you know, therapists are really, really helpful in helping you process life and make good decisions. But, you know, the domain that I work in is love, you know, helping people find love and keep it, and also helping them prepare for love. Mm. And therapists can help with that too. you know, those who are most successful in finding love have done considerable inner work first. Mm-hmm. And so a therapist can be really helpful for that. Mm-hmm. A coach can be too, but it kind of depends on the extent of work, you know, mm-hmm. to be had.
Yes, I believe both therapy and coaching helps to know thyself. You know, I have a deep lot of training in yoga, mm-hmm. and 500 hours is the most amount of time they pay attention to it. And we talk a lot about self-study, and self-study in the sense of really know thyself, because it sets you up for success and establishing a new goal you have, but it also helps you understand the old patterns, habituations, imprints that we live under. And why did that just work out the way it worked, right? It's about getting curious, asking the right questions, and understanding that we don't all know the answers. We have to live our way into the answer. There's a beautiful quote. It's very long. I will bastardize it, but it's something like, be patient with not knowing the answers, because if they were given to you now, you would not understand them, as if they were in foreign languages, in a language you didn't speak. So be comfortable with the discomfort right now, with the not knowing what things are going to look like. If you were to have met me 20 years ago, doctor, and you and I would have had this conversation, it damn well would not be about divorce and dating. I was running a performing arts studio and teaching dance and choreography and modeling agency and birth doulas and yoga teacher training and doing some, you know, went to college for journalism. And I had no interest in, you know, doing the things I'm doing now. Well, I mean, maybe I would have had an interest if I knew it existed, but you have to be patient. Now, you might also think that this type of woman or this type of man is who you want into your life, but in reality, they're the worst possible partner you could ask for. Not that they're a bad person, but they're not a partner, right? There isn't that congruency. So it's kudos to people like you that are able to shine that light and be patient, right, with the process of letting it unfold, because sometimes they want an Oompa Loompa now. You know, I want that person now, damn it. I want, and I'm so, these damn apps are not working. You know, why am I not finding her or him? So speaking of apps, what are the pros and cons of them, of using them? You mentioned that you work with a lot of women, 40s, 50s, and 60s. I'm assuming a good handful of them are post-divorce. So what advice do you give them about using dating apps?
Yeah, well, a lot of people, you know, come to me super frustrated with the apps and they say they don't work. And, you know, I think of the apps as like a huge database of available men and women. And it's not about do the apps work? It's about how we work the apps, right? No one would say, you know, I'm going to date myself here, but no one would say the Yellow Pages don't work. The only thing the Yellow Pages, you know, or Google search, to bring it a little bit more modern, is no one would say that Google search doesn't work, right? It's how we work Google search, right? And so it's really, the work I do with clients is really about harnessing their inner power. I really empower clients to take the reins of their dating life and to work the apps in a very different way. You know, nobody tells us how to find love in this culture. There's no class on it, you know. Well, I have one now, but, you know, like in high school and college, we don't take a class about how to find love, let alone how to find love in this modern world. And so we just, you know, we talk to our girlfriends for women. We talk to our girlfriends about it and confer, and it's more of a trial and error than anything else. But, you know, who we are socialized to be as girls and women is not who we're socialized to be is not helpful in having us find love. And so in order to find love, it actually requires us to be somewhat countercultural. It shouldn't be as hard as it is, but it is based on who the world tells us girls and women to be. And so we kind of break down those cultural expectations in our work together and really find a way for us to be empowered and have the relationship of our dreams, because it does actually require both.
It absolutely does, yeah. And do you have any favorite apps that you are your go-to that you recommend, or maybe not?
Yeah, well, it really depends on who my client is, you know, if they're male, female, the age bracket they're in. And then it also depends too on which market they're in. So, you know, if they're in Atlanta versus San Francisco versus Las Vegas or Canada, the database is very contingent on where you are in the world and what age group you're in.
Right. I see that a lot. And, you know, when I, met my first husband, there was no dating apps. You just met in a, I don't know, I met him in a nightclub and I was 17. So that's a whole interesting conversation. The drinking age back in the day, it was a little bit different, but, yeah, the land of fake IDs and just, hey, want to dance? You know, like it was, those were how people met, and whether that have been, you know, a pizza place or, you know, in high school sweetheart, or, you know, you met at a party, or it was you know, a fix up type of thing. Like, and we've come a long way, baby, you know, as the saying says. So now the younger sect does not do that. It's everything is completely digital, virtual, online.
And layer a pandemic on top of it, right?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Complicated.
I know.
There are ways to really optimize online dating, you know, like you got to make sure that your pictures are great, right? Because 90% of online dating success is your photos. And you have to have your best photo be your thumbnail photo. Otherwise, you know, they'll click right past you. So that, and you know, you want a bio that is reflective of who you really are. And a lot of us aren't well equipped to write something like that. Mm-hmm. We don't know what to include and what to exclude and to really put our best foot forward. Mm. It also gets back to not knowing what to look for. I love so much what you said earlier about, and I completely agree, that most of us overvalue looks and undervalue character and values. Super, super important, right? Because while baseline attraction is important, looks do tend to fade over time, but values and character really don't. Mm-hmm. And so making sure that, and I have my clients also do a values inventory like you, and I think that's the hardest part of my worksheets that I give to them. I have them select 7 out of, you know, many, many, many. But, you know, really leading with our values is important. Our values tend not to change over time. And so if we choose a partner who shares values with us, it just makes life so much easier. They have a similar worldview. But you know, if you look at dating profiles, there's very few who speak to their values. It's mostly activities.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I like to swim and hike and blank, but they don't talk about, I value honesty and, you know, humor, and I don't know, you know, it's different, right? You know, yeah, it's all nice to know what you like to do, but it's like, how do you like to be?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And what's your worldview and perspective?
Well, we say that we're human, you know, we got to do, but we're really human beings and not human doings. That's the big mistake we make. Yeah. Well, how does somebody learn more about you, learn about the programs that you offer? Let's just say they are, you know, almost divorced, getting through it. And you know, the time is starting to heal. They're feeling confused or lonely. They want to get themselves back out there, or they're done and they're, shall we say, procrastinating about getting back out there. Although I am a firm believer in taking your time to heal, jumping back in the fire while you're still a little burnt is never a smart idea. So even if you are the one that's initiating the divorce, it's still very painful. People assume that if you're the one that wanted out, that it doesn't hurt. That's a very big misconception. The guilt, that feeling of heaviness is, it's most of the time I see that that is a burden that prevents some women and men from being like, okay, I don't know if I want to deal with this again. So it's a big responsibility to start putting yourself back out there. So, So what is the best way for people to learn about you so that they can jump back into the dating scene and engage in matchmaking and coaching services with you when they're ready?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I want your audience to know that it's never too late to find love. It really isn't. As long as you have a heartbeat, that's all it takes, you know, a little bit of healing and you can get out there and have a very different experience. So you can find my website at findloveatlast.com, or you can email me. I'm happy to offer the first 5 of your listeners a free dating success call with me. So you can email me at Holly, H-O-L-L-Y, at findloveatlast.com. And you can also connect with me. I have a Facebook group for conscious singles. It is called Conscious Singles From Single to Soulmate. And you can connect with me as well as other singles there. And yeah, those are the best ways to reach me. I'm also on, you know, LinkedIn and all the usuals.
The usual social media things. Well, Dr. Holly, I love your work. Love It Last Masterclass, Manifest the Man of Your Dreams, and how you've got it broken down into the modules of Become, Believe, Qualify, Teach, Date, Commit. It's just very methodical, not so overwhelming, which is important. And also you have that one-on-one coaching for those that really feel like they need that extra one-on-one, as you and I know, it is important. Some may really enjoy more of the masterclass and the group setting, but others need that. And then even deeper dive, I assume, would be the matchmaking, where you want to just say, here I am, find me someone. Not just someone, but yeah, someone compatible.
Masterclass is a great way to get your feet wet and to really prepare to do it differently this next month. And so the masterclass is actually the first step of matchmaking, and you get coaching. It is in a group setting. You can do it anywhere in the world. And that's a great way to start.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you are out there and you are single and you have had, I don't know, I dare say a miserable time, but you've not had the success that you deserve. You've not found the success that you desire, and you're still, you know, grappling, treading water, tiptoeing around, and just not sure. Check her out, learn from her. She knows her stuff. I'm so glad we had this conversation. Thank you for your time. It is a scary world to live out there. You know, be smart. I also had a wonderful interview with Lori Osmond about protecting yourself too, and making sure that you date safely, not just wisely, but be very careful. Meet in public. You know, do those simple things. I'm sure she'll talk to you about all those things, but it is really important that you use your mind and not just your heart with dating. So keep thriving in the chaos. It is really important that you don't necessarily see dating as chaotic, but it is a lot. It's a, you know, what do they say? It's a jungle out there. So you do want to really be prepared. Make sure that you feel like you've made better choices with picking the right person to have dinner with, the first person to have a conversation with. Are they really who they say they are? and make sure that you're not giving out too much personal information, and never exchange any financial documents or info with anyone. So be careful, be careful, be careful. That's just the mother and me talking too. So thank you, Dr. Holly, and everybody. Yeah. You are so deserving of love. It is my goal to make sure that people get through divorce with dignity, and are able to heal, and have the outcome they deserve. And one of those things is to find companionship, camaraderie, and a new love. So thank you again.
You're so welcome. My pleasure. I really believe that finding your partner, that decision, is the most important decision that we make.
And I do wish there was some sort of little law that getting divorced before 30 is not usually a good idea. I don't know. Maybe it's 29. I'm not sure. But usually those really young marriages. But, and to all of you who are happily married in your 20s, keep going. So, but yeah, just a little, I see statistics out there. 50% of divorces between the fourth and the eighth year. Interesting fact, right? Yeah. But with that said, here's to love. I believe in love. Holly believes in love. You are loved. You are safe. You are well. Keep listening. Keep shining. Reach out to me, Paulette at betterdivorceacademy.com. Always here for you. And until next time, keep thriving in the chaos. Thanks for tuning in, and make sure if you want to talk to us or ask us questions, you can always email us at thrivinginchaospodcast@gmail.com. See you next week.